Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
So something happened back in the 1840s in America called the Gold Rush. People from the East went out west searching for this elusive, shimmering rumor that, if found, they believe would change their lives forever. It would be the thing that promised them happiness and contentment and joy and satisfaction. And so they went and they searched. But something strange happened to some of the people who went out west. They went into the rivers with their equipment, and they were streaming and trying to find gold. And then they saw it, this shiny rock. And so they went down and they pulled it up, and their pan was filled with gold. And so they filled up bags with the stuff. And then they whipped out their cell phone. And they called back to Lynchburg or Trenton or wherever they were from. And they were like, "Ma, I done struck gold. Bring the kit. No, you don't need to bring this stuff. I'll buy new stuff. You better hurry up or I'll buy myself a new wife and new kids." And then he called Century 21, and he said, "Is this Century 21 agent? Yeah, I want to buy the big house on the corner of Dutch and Elm. Do I got money? Yes, I got money. I struck gold." And hung up, and then called the Home Shopping Network and said, "You know those rotisserie chicken cookers I've been seeing on the TV set? Man, send like 2 cases of them. Do I have the money? I done struck gold." And hung up the phone. And so mom and the kids came out west, and they got the big house on the corner of Dutch and Elm, and the rotisserie chicken cookers start getting delivered. And so pretty soon all the bills start arriving. So finally he takes the big bags of gold down to Citibank. And there's this nice teller he meets named Pam Willis, and so he kind of dumps his gold out to get, you know, cash in exchange, and Pam Willis starts to giggle, and he says, "Why are you giggling there, honey? You just never seen so much gold?" And she says, "No, sir, I don't know how to explain this, but this isn't gold. These are copper pyrites." And he said, "What you talking about, Willis? Did you see how I did that? That was pretty good, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, I set you up." Yeah. And she said, "Yeah, I understand your confusion. It looks like gold. In fact, we call it fool's gold out west. It's fool's gold. It's copper pyrites. It looks like gold, but it's not gold. It's what you have is a pile of rocks." And can you imagine? Can you imagine being that guy and thinking that you had struck gold, thinking that you had found your ticket to happiness and contentment and joy and satisfaction, only to discover it's fool's gold. It's fool's gold. And you might hear that and say, "Oh, okay, I guess that may happen. That's interesting, but I mean, that's an old story. You know, people don't search for gold anymore, and they certainly don't find fool's gold anymore." And if you said that, you'd be right. Except that I think you'd be wrong. Because I think people do go out searching for gold. They go out searching for this elusive, shiny rumor, this one thing that they're sure is out there. And if they just find it, it's going to bring them the happiness and the joy and the satisfaction that they've longed for their whole lives, but it's always eluded them. But they're just going to find it. And people today still get fooled by fool's gold. But by something that shimmers but fades. It's no wonder people search, right? You can't blame us for searching for that thing. Because I think there's something inside of us that leads us there, right? There's something inside of us as humans that causes us, I guess, to go out searching for this something, this X factor that we're talking about that will bring me what I'm looking for. And not only is there something inside of us, it's everything around us, right? Everywhere we look, there's messages telling us that there's something that would change our lives. There's a special something, like commercials on TV. Have you ever thought about how products promote their products? Like even the slogans they use, it's kind of interesting and deceptive. Like, it's not their motto anymore, but Dr. Pepper, their slogan used to be, "The one you're searching for Come on. Like, there's people going on treks to Mecca. There's people meeting with the Dalai Lama. There's people attending institutes of higher learning. But the whole time, the thing you've been searching for was available in a vending machine outside of Albertsons, because Dr. Pepper is actually the one you've been searching for. Yeah. Or Snickers. What does Snickers do? It really satisfies. Well, that's all you need in life. You don't need anything else. You just need some peanuts and some caramel and some chocolate, and you'll be satisfied, right? Have you ever heard Jerry Seinfeld talk about this? He talks about how the commercials, they're typically for beer, where somebody like opens a beer and all of a sudden, like, boom, there's girls around them in bikinis, and there's people dancing around them, and there's people playing volleyball, and just this party. And he says, have you ever been like watching TV and that commercial was on and you happen to realize that you were drinking the exact drink that they were advertising in the commercial, and so you kind of went, I must be using too much ice. You know, it's like, wait a second. You don't get the life you were promised, you know? And it's not just TV commercials. Man, sometime, do this. Look at a magazine rack and just kind of peruse all the article titles and what they promise if you'll just read them. Here are some actual magazine articles I found and read. One article said, how to radiate assurance and self-esteem. I read it. It didn't work. There was another article that the title said, 6 Steps to Happiness Guaranteed. I read it. It didn't work. There was another article that said, How to Drive Your Man Wild in the Bedroom. I gave it to my wife, Jen. 1 out of 3 ain't bad. Okay, I'll let that kind of simmer. Okay, and so you can't blame us for looking, right? Everywhere we're told that there's something out there. There is this mysterious something. There is this X factor that if we just find it, right? If we just find it, we'll be satisfied. We'll be content. We'll find what we've always been missing. And let me tell you this. It's not new, this search. That didn't come along with the advent of Madison Avenue and commercial. I mean, it's been around forever. And this search that we all go on, it happened in a very powerful and illustrative way in the life of a guy named Solomon. Solomon lived a long time ago in the Old Testament times of the Bible. And Solomon was kind of the ultimate seeker. Solomon was actually, a bunch of the Old Testament's written about him, and some of the Old Testament was written by him. Solomon was the son of David. If you know the story of David versus Goliath, that guy became Solomon's father, and David became King David, and Solomon succeeded David to the throne. He became a king at a pretty young age. And the thing about Solomon was he was not content. He wasn't just like, you know, life's okay. He was like, there's something out there, and I am going to find it. I am going to find fulfillment. I am going to find joy. I am going to find contentment. I am going to find satisfaction. The thing that's interesting about him is he had the means. He had the resources to search in ways that we wouldn't be able to even dream of. I mean, he was able to go for it. And so I thought it might be helpful to us to look at his search and to kind of see what he found and what did he find to be gold and what did he find to be fool's gold. Maybe it'll help us. And we can do that because he kept his kind of details of his search in a personal journal that we have in the Bible called the Book of Ecclesiastes. So if you have a Bible, you can turn to the Book of Ecclesiastes. It should be right around the middle of your Bible. If you open up right in half, you should be in Psalms and you just move to Proverbs and then Ecclesiastes. And we're going to start in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. So one of the paths that Solomon took to try to find happiness, to find this X factor, this satisfaction in life, was pleasure seeking. He got this idea that, man, if I just find enough pleasurable experiences, I'll be happy, right? If I can just, you know, kind of be pleased enough with what's going on in my life and just be excited and have enough fun, well, then I'll be satisfied. And a lot of us would say, that's exactly the path I'm going down, right? Like my hope is that if I can just, you know, have enough fun, if I can just do enough cool things, then my life will be pretty good. And so look at what Solomon writes. In verse 1 of chapter 2, he says, I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. Now, here's the deal with Solomon, though. He did it up. he did it in ways like, he goes on to describe, and you should read this, what he did. Like, he consumed vast amounts of alcohol. I mean, dude made Charlie Sheen look sober. Like he went for it with alcohol. And then he decided, well, maybe if it's not alcohol, maybe it's sex. And so he actually accumulated 700 wives. He had 700 women available to him at all times. 700 wives. The one thing I know for sure about that is right about 700 too many mother-in-laws. But he had 700 women available to him. And so, man, he went for it in every conceivable way with trying to find pleasurable experiences. And if it is possible to find that missing something in life through pleasure-seeking, through experiences, Solomon would have found it. And so let's check out the conclusion he comes to. So in verse 1 again, he starts out, I thought in my heart, come now, I'll test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? The conclusion that he comes to is, man, it's not it. It shimmers. It looks good. But it's fool's gold. It's fool's gold. It doesn't add up. It's not there. And I know this. Some of us have gone down this path. Some of us are far enough down this path that we've already come to that conclusion, right? And maybe you haven't even admitted it out loud yet, but you've lived for pleasure, whatever it is for you. It may be drugs. It might be alcohol. It might be high adrenaline sports. It may be popularity. It may be going, seeing the world, you know, incredible vacations. Whatever it is for you, some of us have gone down that path far enough to realize this isn't it. I thought this was it, and it's not it. We've gone down that road far enough to realize I've gotten what I wanted, but I'm still missing what I'm missing. You know, I got what I thought was going to fill this hole inside of me, this vacuum that wants to suck up something. And I got it, and it's not it, right? Some of us are there, and some of us are on our path to there. You know, Solomon experienced this. He came to this conclusion that, man, pleasure is not enough. That's not the thing that will fill us up inside. And he's kind of an old example. A more modern example would be Kurt Cobain, the singer for Nirvana, who, man, if it's possible to find life, right, to find what you're missing in pleasure experiences, he would have found it. I mean, the guy had all the alcohol he wanted, all the drugs he wanted, all the women he wanted. He traveled the world. He toured the world. He had success and popularity. If it's possible to find, you know, the thing that we're missing in pleasurable experiences, Kurt Cobain would have found it, but he didn't. He ended his life in suicide. In his suicide note, he wrote this, I haven't felt the excitement for too many years now. The fact is, I can't fool you, any one of you. It simply isn't fair to you or me. The worst crime I can think of would be to rip people off by faking it and pretending as if I'm having fun. I need to be slightly numb in order to regain the enthusiasm I once had as a child. I just don't have the passion anymore. And the crazy thing about that is, and he achieved a lot of our dreams. You know, we think, man, if I could be that famous, if I could travel the world, if I could see the world, if I could, you know, have that kind of... But he said, no, it's not gold. It's fool's gold. It's a chasing after the wind. It's chasing after something you can never quite grasp. And here's the thing that Kurt Cobain found and that, you know, I hope we find before it's too late. Your heart will only be satisfied by true gold. Solomon didn't just look to pleasurable experience. He also looked to success. You know, he thought, okay, it's not pleasure seeking. It's not that. Maybe it's success. Like maybe if I get enough money, maybe if I have notable enough achievements, perhaps if I gain enough possessions, then I'll do it. And man, he went for it in this, and he amassed a fortune that's almost unrivaled in the history of the world. He had everything. I mean, he had the kind of money that would make like Donald Trump or Steve Jobs green with envy. He had it all. And here, and he achieved things that are still talked about today. It's like, how in the world did that nation under Solomon's leadership accomplish that at that time? I mean, incredible things. And his conclusion is this, in verse 11 of chapter 2. He says, "Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun." He says, you know what? I went for it, and I thought that it had satisfaction in it, but I could just never quite grab it, and it turned out to be meaningless. And again, a lot of us are discovering the same thing. You know what's interesting? They've done all kinds of studies on happiness. Not like people's opinions or stuff like that, but they've actually studied what makes people happy. The happy people, what do they have that other people don't, and things like that. And one of the big things they studied is this exact thing. Do promotions make people happy? Does money make people happy? Does having a lot of savings make people happy? Does having the ability to spend make people happy? Does having a better lifestyle make people happy? Does success make people happy? And interesting conclusions. There was a guy named David Myers. He wrote a book called The Pursuit of Happiness, Who is Happy and Why? And here's what he writes. And again, this isn't his philosophy or opinion. This is what... This is kind of what his studies have shown. He says, the things that enable you to be happy are not how much money you make or how many possessions you own or whether you are highly educated or whether you are old or young. And he writes this. He says, while per capita income in America more than doubled in real terms between 1957 and 1990, the number of Americans who reported being happy remained the same, one-third. There was another study done, really, really fascinating, where they studied three different groups of people over a long stretch of time. The first group were people who had won the lottery. I mean, like, big lotteries. The second group were people who were victims of horrible accidents. And the third group were people who had nothing remarkable happen to them during this stretch of time. And what they discovered is that the most unhappy and miserable group of people were the lottery winners. Now let that sink in for a second. Because wouldn't it be true that a lot of us would say, that's my dream, right? That's my dream. I mean, some of us would be like, I don't even play the lottery, but I still want to win the lottery someday. And so, you know, seriously, if I could just like win millions of dollars and so I could quit my job, I could go on trips, I could buy whatever I want to buy, I could help my family, right? That's our dream, is to have that kind of money. And so really, what we're saying is, my dream is to be amongst the most miserable people in the world, right? I just want to be unhappy. That's what I really long for, right? It's a chasing after the wind. It's meaningless. You're still restless, still searching for this thing that you've been missing. And even when you get what you think it is, you're still missing what you're missing. And I'll tell you this, it is a very critically important yet scary moment in your life when you realize this. When you realize that what you've been chasing, like let's say success, that it's not going to do it for you. That is like a critical juncture in your life. There's a scene in the old movie Chariots of Fire, probably dating myself, the movie's about these two Olympic runners who both are great, you know, potential to win the gold medal. One of them, his name is Eric Liddell. Eric Liddell happens to be a Christian who lives for God, but also happens to run, and he's a great Olympic runner. The other guy's name is Harold Abrams, and he lives to run. It's the point of his existence. It's everything he's put his life into. And there's this point in the movie, it's a true story, where it's just moments before the big race that both of these guys have been, like, you know, they devote their entire lives to this. And Harold Abrams has this great quote. He says this. He says, you know, I used to be afraid to lose, but now I'm afraid to win. I have 10 seconds to prove the reason for my existence, and even then, I am not sure I will. That, That's an important moment. That's a scary moment, right? And he's realizing, if I go out there and win gold, what then? If I win gold, is that really going to fill up my soul? Is that really going to do it for me? Is it going to give me this missing, this X factor that I long for and I don't know how to define? And realizing it's not. And that's a big moment in your life. And maybe some of us need to have that sooner rather than later, right? Save us from some pain. You know, one of the great modern-day examples of this, I think, is the author Ernest Hemingway. And you want to talk about success stories. Ernest Hemingway. The dude won a Pulitzer Prize and a Nobel Prize. Try pulling that off. That's pretty successful, right? He had homes in Italy, France, Spain, and Cuba. That ain't bad. He was a multimillionaire, just wealthy as wealthy can be. He went on African safaris. I mean, he was the measure of success. And then he ended his life with the ultimate exclamation point of dissatisfaction when he committed suicide. And you're like, wait. Because that's what I dream about, man. That's what I long for. That's what I'm living my life for, is to have that kind of success, to achieve notable things and to be wealthy and to have homes and different kinds. That's what I'm living for. And he got it and killed himself. See, the thing I think you realize, and the thing that's true for you and me, is your heart will only be satisfied by true gold. You can get all the success in the world, and you'll still be missing what you're missing. Well, this guy Solomon, he didn't just try pleasure and success. He tried everything. You should go home and read the book. It's not that long. You can read it probably tonight or tomorrow. And he went down every path imaginable. And what he found was that all these shiny things at the end of the path, because he got them. He didn't hope for them. He got them. Fool's gold. Every single time. And some of us have realized that too, you know? And when you do, when you realize that everything you've dreamed about and this path that you've gone down isn't going to cut it, it's not enough to fill this hole inside of you. It's not the X factor that you thought it was. Here's what I want you to remember. The only thing big enough to fill the hole inside of you is God. And it's true. The only thing big enough to fill the hole inside of you is God. I came to this point in my life, the first 20 years of my life, and I lived for pleasure and I lived for success. And man, I went hard after it. And some of you don't know me very well, I'm a very intense person, a little too much probably. And so I didn't just say, I like to succeed. I was like, no, I have to get a 4.0. I'm going to be first in my college. I'm going to, I have to get a full scholarship. I have to this. And I'm not going to get high once in a while. I'm going to do it every single day. And everything I did, I went for it. And no matter what I got, I'm still missing what I was missing. And then at the age of 20, I was exposed. I kind of had my first moment, my first understanding of God. I didn't grow up in church, had never touched a Bible, no background in it. But I kind of had an encounter with God in a sense. And I wasn't sure about it, and I started to investigate. And finally, there's this verse in the Bible that says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." And so I did. And he was. And I started traveling down that path, and I reached this moment where I realized that I had to make a choice. I had to. And I had to choose, would I continue pursuing other things to try to find my satisfaction, or would I make God everything? Would I make him my X factor? Would he be the one thing I look to for my joy and contentment and happiness and satisfaction? And I made the choice to do that. And I need to tell you this. My life has been awesome since. It hasn't been perfect. I wouldn't pretend and say, man, everything, it hasn't been perfect. I guess the way I would say it is this. It would be very difficult for me to put into words how disappointing my life was before that moment. And it would be difficult for me to tell you how amazing my life has been since. Not perfect, but amazing. And it's because I decided I'm going to stop pursuing other things that don't satisfy me. I'm just going to fill myself with God. See, there comes this point in your life, I think, where you realize, you know, what if God is what I'm missing? What if God is what I'm missing? Maybe he's the thing. Jesus talked about this idea once where he said the reason he came was to offer us living water. He said every other thing that you drink in life, every thing you try to quench your soul thirst with, it leaves you thirsty again. And he said, but I can offer you something that will quench your thirst forever. I mean, you drink of this and you'll never be thirsty again. I came to bring you a relationship with God, and that's what God can do for you. And it's true, man. I think there's some reasons that God does that in our lives, that he kind of fills this vacuum that we have. I think part of it is that a lot of our issues, a lot of our problems are things that have happened to us in the past, right? We could probably each come up here and talk for a long time about all the crap we've been through. And part of the problem is we're seeking all this stuff, but no matter what we find, it doesn't help with what's happened. It doesn't replace what happened. It doesn't erase what's happened. But God does. When we pursue God and we find God and we look to God, he brings healing to all the scars in our life. And little by little, we find ourselves freed from our past. And it's not just that. Another thing about God is that he's constant. You know? Like if you live for pleasure, well, sometimes you're having pleasurable experiences and sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're trying to have pleasurable experiences, but you're not, right? But when you live for God, and he's always God. And he's always there for you. The other thing about God, and probably the main thing, is God's the only thing that can fill your eternal longings. And that's what we have inside of us. It's an eternal longing. Solomon talks about this in Ecclesiastes. If you read it, you'll see. He talks about this idea that God has placed eternity in our hearts. Okay? According to the Bible, God put eternity in your heart. And you know that's true. Okay? No matter who you are, no matter what perspective you're coming from tonight, man, if you were honest, I think you'd admit, I know what you're talking about. But because there's something inside of us that drives us to ask questions, right? Questions like, man, is this really all there is? Where does that question come from? Questions like, what's my purpose in life? Questions like, is there more than just this life? Is there something after this life, right? You ask those questions. You know who doesn't ask those questions? Your cat. You know? Your cat never, like, sits on its back playing with string going, why do I exist? You know, what's the point of life? What's the meaning? Your cat doesn't ask those questions because God did not put eternity in your cat's heart. He put it in yours, right? And so the longing that you have inside of you, this hole inside, this sense of restlessness that you feel, it's for something eternal. And God is the only thing that can fill that eternal void inside of you. There's this theory, and I kind of like it. I kind of think it's probably true. But there's this theory that maybe one of the things that God has done in this world, in our lives, is that he's given us little foretastes, little foreshadows, little hints of the eternal. That God's given us these little eternal sparks that happen that we get to experience, like here and now. We're experiencing like a second of eternity. But now, and God does it to kind of almost like leave a trail of breadcrumbs. You know, it's kind of like, I want to give you some just little flashes of eternity so that you'll realize there's got to be more. This life can't be it. This world that I experience can't be all there is. And you'll follow the trail of breadcrumbs until you realize, man, it's God. He's the only one who can satisfy my longings. And so these experiences, these little shadows of the divine, these little tastes of eternity, it might be something you experience in drug use, you know, that you take drugs and you just have this moment. It's like you can't describe it. Or it might be in sex. Or it might be in this incredible group experience. Like maybe you're at a concert and everybody's like going crazy. Or you're at a game and your team wins and you're jumping up and down. But there's like this second, and I think we've all experienced this, where it's like, it's indescribable. Like your soul just kind of takes flight, you know? It's like, whoo, you know, and you can't describe what just that feeling that you had. It's like, wow, that's like beyond this world. Maybe, it's just a theory, maybe those are moments that God has given, or like just love, you know, like you see your baby being born, you know, or something. And maybe those are moments that lead us, or intended to lead us to God. But what happens for a lot of us is we get hooked on that moment. And rather than using it as a means to an end, what we do is we kind of get hooked on it. And it's kind of like instead of following the trail of breadcrumbs, I get obsessed with breadcrumbs, you know? And so it's like I become addicted to breadcrumbs because that moment was so good, I want to recreate it. And have you noticed that, like, when you try to recreate it, it's never quite as good as the first time? And so you kind of have to up the ante to try to get that feeling back. And then you have to up it again and up it again. And people get addicted and obsessed with this experience they're trying to have when maybe the whole time it was intended to lead you to God, because this hole you have inside of you, and it's eternal. God put eternity in your heart, and He is the only one who can fill that hole. Listen, if you've gone far enough down that path, and you realize, no matter what I get, I'm still missing what I'm missing. And maybe you're trying to figure out, what is it? What is it that I dream of? What is it that I long for? What is the X factor, this almost undefinable, you know, not quite tangible thing that's going to change my life? I would tell you that the God I know is what you're looking for. And that your heart will only be satisfied by true gold. And God's it. God is the X factor. Now, I want to say one thing. One of the coolest things about our church, I love about our church, is the reason we started our church is we kind of have almost like two groups of people. And this is very unusual in a church. We have a bunch of people here every service, all three services, who would tell you, I don't believe this stuff. I don't believe in Jesus. I'm not so sure about God. You know, I'm not a Christian. But they I'm investigating. You know, I think this is a safe place. It's kind of a cool place to come, and I'm trying to figure it out. I'm open. Okay, so, and we're so glad that people like you, if you're that person, come here, and this is a place for you. Okay, but then we do have another group of people who would say, no, I am it. Like I do believe in God. I believe in Jesus, and I want to have a relationship with Him. I'm trying to follow Jesus, and you know, I'm here because I do believe in Him. So we kind of have two groups of people. For a moment, let me talk to this group of people, okay? So if you're in this group of people, if you're like, I'm not so sure, you can still listen. You don't have to leave or anything. But I want to talk to these guys for a minute. And I want to ask you this, okay? So if you're somebody who's like, no, I'm with the whole Jesus thing. I'm good. Let me ask you this. What are you looking to for your satisfaction? What are you looking to for your satisfaction? Because here's the deal. There are a lot of people who I really do believe that they come to a point in their life where they believe in Jesus. They accept there is a God. Jesus was sent to be His Son. He died for me. I want to put my faith in Him. So they become a Christian, but never live the Christian life a day of their lives. Never live the life that God offers to them a day of their lives. Really a Christian? I think so. But they've never lived the Christian life. And these are the people who say, I don't get it, man. It's not that great. And you talk about how your life's been so awesome. My life's not so awesome. I don't get it. And so the question is, well, what are you looking to for your satisfaction? Because a lot of people who are Christians, if they were honest and you said, what do you think is the thing that's going to make you happy? What's the thing that's going to give you contentment? What's going to bring you joy? What is going to be the satisfaction you find in life? If they're honest, they'd say pleasurable experiences. Now, I think if I just have enough fun and I go out enough and I have good enough friends to hang out with and I see the world enough and I go on enough vacations, then I'm going to be happy. Or a lot of them would say success. If I can get a good enough job, and if I can get enough money, if I can have enough good enough possessions, I need a better car, a house, and then I'll be happy, right? And so what this person's really doing is they're kind of saying, oh, I'm good with Jesus. I'm going down that path. I'm following Jesus. And I also am going down this path, right? So I'm good. I'm following Jesus. But I'm also, I want success or whatever. And by the way, just real quick, I'm not saying you can't have these things. Okay, I'm not saying, hey, if you have Jesus, you can't have money. If you have Jesus, you can't go on vacation. If you have Jesus, you can't have fun. I'm not saying that at all, right? You can, and God would want you to have all those things. But there's a big difference between having those things, wanting those things, and making that your thing, right? That's the thing that's going to make me happy. And so there's a lot of people who are saying, Jesus and, right? Well, Jesus talked about this a lot. And like one of the things he said is, he said, you cannot serve two masters. You can't serve two masters, right? He's saying, you can't. There's no such thing as Jesus and. There's not. You can have money, you can go on vacations and stuff, but when you think that's the thing that's going to come through for you, that's the thing that's going to change my life, and if I can just get that, then that's your God. That's what you worship, right? You're not worshiping me, okay? And so you can't have both, right? There's no Jesus and so pick one. Here's what I would encourage you. And I'm about to say something you'll never hear a pastor say the rest of your life. You can write it down, but don't tell anybody because you're going to misquote me a little bit and I'm going to end up looking like an idiot, all right? You're never going to hear this again. But if you're this person who's Jesus and, if you're just being honest, and you're not ready, you're not willing to say, man, I'm just going to make it Jesus. But like, I'm tired of the other path. It doesn't work. I see that. I've been wrong. I'm going to look for my satisfaction, joy, contentment, happiness in Jesus. And I believe that he'll come through for me. If you're not ready to say that, here's what I would suggest to you. I would say, go down the other path wholeheartedly. I don't mean like, stop the Jesus and. There is no Jesus and. And so go down the other path. I'm talking like, indulge in it. Whatever it is, run after it. Chase after it. Work for it. Sweat for it. Abandon yourself completely to pursuing whatever you think it is that's going to satisfy you. Do it up. Because what's going to happen is you'll get to the end of that path and you'll get everything you've ever wanted and still be missing what you're missing. And realize, I just spent years chasing after wind. And I'm still empty, right? And my hope would be at that point, maybe you'd be like, oh yeah, Vince said, there's no Jesus and. And that you realize, man, God is the only thing who's going to do it for me. If I'm going to find contentment in this life. And when you get to that point, come over here and do the same with Jesus, right? Don't be like, okay, I'm going to show up at church. I'm going to read my Bible more faithfully. That's not what we're talking about, right? I'm talking about indulge in Jesus. Like, run after him. Chase after him. Sweat for him. Work for him. Like, abandon yourself completely to him. And what you'll discover when you go down that path is contentment. And your heart will be filled. And you'll, for the first time in your life, you'll experience real satisfaction. And you'll realize, man, I have a God who delivers the goods. He's true gold. And all along, my heart would settle for nothing less. The X factor I've been searching for my whole life was God. It was God. All right. Well, here's what we do. Some of you are probably new here tonight, and we do something a little different. Our deal, so we spend about an hour in this room a week, and then you spend about 167 hours out there. And our service in here is not about the hour in here. It's about the 167 hours out there, okay? And so the idea of this room isn't to have this great experience, say, what a good service, who cares, right? The idea of this room and what we do in here is, man, let's make the other 167 hours more like they're supposed to be and more like what we want them to be. And so what we do is we give you a couple minutes just to process that. Like when I leave this place, what do I do with what I just experienced? You know, maybe a chance just to ask yourself before you leave. It's going to be like 3 minutes. Just some provocative questions. You know, maybe ask yourself, am I happy? The path I've been, what am I searching for? What do I think? What's the thing? You know, what's the three wishes I give to the genie in a bottle? What is it I think will satisfy me? And is it really going to satisfy me? Or will I still be missing what I'm missing? And if I'm going down the wrong path, what do I do about that? And what would it look like for me to really chase after Jesus? Okay, so just maybe spend some time processing that. So we hope to send you out of here going, I know what my next step is. And we'd love to help you with that. We have this thing called the Velcro Bar. There's people back there who are ready to talk to you if you want to talk, if you want to ask questions, if you want somebody to pray for you, anything. So if you're like, man, I need somebody to talk to you about this, stop by there. They'd love to talk to you. They're cool people. So the band's going to come up, play some kind of background music. Actually, they're going to play a great song. It's called Everything, and it's about this. It's about, and God doesn't want to be something in your life. God wants to be everything. And when you really think about who God is and what he's done for you, it's hard not to respond in a way that you make him everything. So they're going to play a song. You guys have time to think. Pray if you pray. Ask yourself some tough questions. And during this time, we also make communion available. It's on the tables with the candlelight. Communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice, and they represent the body and blood of Christ. And so it's this kind of odd and holy and mysterious and beautiful and tangible way to remember what Jesus did for us when he gave his life so that we could have life. You know, and we have this Jesus who asks us to make him everything, but you realize, and you realize as you take communion, and he made me everything. He made me everything. It kind of makes sense, you know, to make him my everything. So if you want to take communion, go to those tables. You can bring it back to you, to your seat, and you can eat and drink when you're ready. All right, so let's pray. God, thanks. Guys, thank you for being a great and awesome God. And the best thing that can happen to us is to see you, to know you, to experience you, and to bring you into our life, to give our lives to you, to make you not something, but to make you everything. God, we deal with so many shiny things in this world, and they get our attention, and a lot of us have found much of it to be fool's gold. I pray tonight we realize, you know, I'm not going to settle for anything less than true gold. God is what I'm missing, and I want him. Thanks, God, for sending Jesus and what he did for us on the cross and for communion. It's just a tangible reminder of that. We pray in his name. Amen.